evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, August 22nd, 2016. The South Sudan government bans the former first vice president from practicing politics if he returns to the country.
He should abstain from politics until that time when election comes, because what he wanted is to be the president. And to become a president is not taken by force. It is through the ballot, not the bullet.
And the U.S. donates an additional $138 million for humanitarian work in South Sudan.
For the people back home, I'm talking about our taxpayers in the United States, this is not forever. We're not just going to fill in a void. We're not just going to provide help incessantly. If they're not willing to accept responsibility and do the things necessary to deliver to their people.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The U.S. Secretary of State, John Kerry, has called for deployment of a protection force to help stabilize South Sudan during his visit to Nairobi today. Kerry also warned that U.S. aid to South Sudan could be cut off unless leaders there take dramatic steps to stabilize the conflict-ridden country. VOA's Jill Craig has more from Nairobi, Kenya.
South Sudan was at the top of the agenda Monday as Kerry met with Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta and foreign ministers from Kenya, Uganda, Sudan, Somalia, and South Sudan in Nairobi at the start of a three-country tour. Speaking to reporters, the Secretary of State announced the United States would be giving $138 million in new aid to South Sudan, which he said would be used for food, water, and medicine for those in need. He also issued a warning to that country's leadership.
But I want to make this clear, and I particularly think it's important for the people back home who are engaged in trying to help. I'm talking about our taxpayers in the United States. We made it crystal clear that this is not forever. We're not just going to fill in a void. We're not just going to provide help incessantly. If they're not willing to accept responsibility and do the things necessary to deliver to their people. That message was delivered loud and clear today.
Kerry also said it is urgent to deploy the 4,000-troop Regional Protection Force in South Sudan, recently authorized by the UN Security Council. President Kenyatta thanked the U.S. government for sponsoring that resolution. The U.S. proposed the force after clashes in South Sudan's capital last month killed some 300 people and prompted opposition leader Riek Machar to flee the country.
And let me emphasize, this is not an intervention force. This is a protection force with a very clear mandate to be able to protect people for their access, their freedom of movement, and their ability to remain free from attack or ambush from any source whatsoever. It is supplementary to the sovereignty and the efforts of South Sudan itself. And I think we had a good clearing of the air today in the discussion that we had with the participants on this subject.
Kerry also announced the United States would be giving an additional $117 million to support refugees, returnees, and drought victims in Somalia. He said another $29 million will be donated to the UN Refugee Agency for the safe and voluntary return of Somali refugees in Kenya, primarily from the sprawling Dadaab camp. Following an earlier closed-door meeting, a Kenyatta statement expressed hope Somalia will abide by its presidential election calendar, with polls scheduled for October 30th. He also noted the importance of building capacity within the Somali National Army, as the African Union plans to draw down its mission in Somalia by 2018. Kerry noted he and Kenyatta discussed the importance of preparations for Kenya's 2017 national elections, and said the United States is investing more than $25 million to support that electoral process.
I'm pleased to see that progress is being made in reforming the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission. And I urge in the most emphatic terms that disagreements about policy and process be resolved through peaceful means. Kenya has come a long way since the elections of 2007. It is up to leaders on all sides to ensure that the violence that took place in the aftermath of that election is never repeated.
Later in the day, Kerry met with participants in the Young African Leaders Initiative and the Mandela Washington Fellows programs. Kerry will next travel to Nigeria and then Saudi Arabia. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
A senior SPLM-IO official says his party does not accept the government's preconditions for former first vice president Riek Machar. South Sudan's information minister says the cabinet decided on Friday that Machar must stop practicing politics and denounce violence before he returns to Juba. But former education minister calls the conditions unacceptable. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Juba.
Information Minister Michael Makwei says the Council of Ministers decided on Friday to set conditions for Machar's return. He says Machar's presence in Juba led to the last month's deadly violence in capital. He says Machar is better off if he keeps quiet.
If Riek Machar wants to come back to South Sudan, then he should denounce violence so that we don't go back to war, because it is his coming here which created this violence. Number two, he should abstain from politics until that time when election comes, because what he wanted is to be the president. And to become a president is not taken by force. It is through the ballot, not the bullet.
Former Minister of Education Peter Nyaba says Machar should be encouraged to return to the capital with no conditions.
We will not accept this because he's our leader and he's our Sudanese. And how can he stay in exile? It's a very, very stupid kind of condition, you know, somebody who does not want peace.
Makwei says President Kiir's appointed ministers are waiting for the SPLM-IO to decide whether they want Machar to resume his position of first vice president. Taban Dengai, the new first vice president, said at the SPLM-IO meeting over the weekend that Machar should stay in exile.
So this is our message, you know? Let him be in peace where he is, and let him go to any of his countries of his choice.
Deng says Machar's return to Juba could cause more violence, but did not elaborate. But Nyaba says the condition expressed by both Makwei and Deng are meant to, as he put it, water down the already staggering implementation of 1-year-old peace deal. Nyaba says the agreement cannot be implemented without Machar's participation.
Dr. Machar is a very important factor in the peace process itself. You cannot implement the peace process without him. In fact, what Taban, Makwei and those of Salfakir did was really, you know, to destroy the peace agreement itself. And Salfakir has been clear from day one that this agreement would not be implemented, because he does not want to share power. He wants to maintain this totalitarian regime based and or driven by ethnic nationalism.
Makwei insists the government is committed to implementing the peace agreement with the new SPLM-IO leadership, but worries that Machar's return would interrupt what he calls the smooth implementation of the peace deal. Several articles in the year-old peace agreement have never been implemented, such as adhering to the permanent ceasefire. Makwei says Machar's presence in Juba complicates matter for the parties that signed the peace deal 1 year ago.
And the implementation of the agreement is moving well. We don't want it interrupted, but we want to continue the implementation of the agreement so that our people can live in peace and harmony. We, as a government, we have no problem with him coming here, but he should come to South Sudan on these conditions.
Late last week, Machar and a small group of SPLM-IO appeared on the border of South Sudan and Democratic Republic of Congo. The UN mission in DRC transported the group to an undisclosed location in DRC. Machar's next move is unclear. His party officials in Nairobi kept promising that Machar was well and was going to address the press last week. Congolese officials are tight-lipped about the presence of the former vice president on their soil. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
SPLM officials in the Transitional Government of National Unity are worried about the slow pace of implementing the August peace deal. The Minister for Federal Affairs, Richard Muller, says the major obstacles blocking, including President Kiir's 28 states, are blocking the road to peace. Tito Justin has the details for VOA from Juba.
First Vice President Thabang Dengai met with about 100 SPLM-I officials over the weekend in the capital to discuss South Sudan's latest political developments and the progress in the implementation of the peace deal. Deng insists that he and President Kiir are making progress in implementing the IGAD brokered agreement, but Federal Affairs Minister Richard Kemula says that is not true.
There are certain things we could have done by now. For example, the release of political detainees and prisoners of war. Why is there a delay? This event doesn't need time. We have discussed this matter for a long time in the Council of Ministers. Yes, we are going to release them. Yes, but up to now, they are not released. Could you please take up this matter very seriously and speed it up?
More than a week ago, President Kiir issued an order to reorganize and reintegrate SPLM-I forces into the National Army. Mr. Kiir's order also directed military officials to establish containment areas and to immediately move SPLA joint military forces to those areas. Mula says he is yet to see any established containment areas. And he says some of the security arrangements outlined in the August peace agreement have still not been implemented.
But actually, which are the cantonment sites? They have not been mentioned. Even in Equatoria, we'd like to know which are these cantonment sites so that people start working instead of just talking about cantonment without mentioning the sites. Can we go ahead?
First Vice President Thabang Dengai says the cantonment sites are not important at the moment.
The agreement did not mention how many cantonment areas. For us to establish the cantonment areas, we must know the reason behind that. Is it to create a national army? Is it to create peace? But if it is the purpose to make a political center for the mobilization of politics, like what Riak did, it will be resisted.
Mula says a proposal has been floating in the Council of Ministers meeting to form committees to review the President Kiir's unilaterally created 28 states and to establish cantonment sites for SPLA-IO forces. But he says he has yet to see progress.
Why can't this committee be appointed, even if certain backdoor discussions are taking place? Why can't we make the committee be seen to be working and consulting with the people to come up with the results? These are the kind of steps, if taken up immediately, Mr. First Vice President, I think it can be seen that we are working and implementing the agreement to the letter and the spirit. Others will follow later.
Deng also suggested during weekend meetings that the SPLM-IO under his leadership should unite with the SPLM officials in government. Gabriel Diop Lam, the Minister of Labor, Public Service and Human Resource Development, says joining President Kiir's government will only hinder implementation of the peace agreement.
If we want to implement the agreement, the SPLM, SPLM-IO alone will not implement the agreement. It need IO to be somewhere on the other side, and the other political parties that are meant to be the part of the agreement.
President Kiir created the 28 states after he signed the peace agreement a year ago. Former First Vice President Riek Machar and other SPLM-IO officials have said the move violates the peace agreement. For VI News, I am Tiro Justin in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at merging SPLM-IO forces with government. Can it be done? Find out when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
How does your community care for older and disabled people?
At home, you can give them some of your children so that they can go and help them by cooking for them or sweeping for them or mopping for them. And also in around the society, we can contribute some amount of money so that we can raise their level and living standards.
My community always care about elderly people in case they have lack of food, so they can help. And then if they have lack of shelter, then my community also can see those people and can count to those people how many people are being affected by this situation so that they can be helped.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. An analyst and a civil society activist say the government must first focus on ironing out differences within the SPLM-IO before integrating SPLM-IO forces into the South Sudan Army. Waki Simon Wudu has this report from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
James Okuk is a political science lecturer at the University of Juba. He says integrating the SPLM-IO forces under the leadership of Taban Dengai into the National Army is an attempt at addressing insecurity in several parts of the country. Okuk says disunity within the ranks of the SPLM-IO must first be dealt with if the government wants to genuinely address the country's insecurity. He says forces loyal to former First Vice President Riek Machar may not accept the idea of integrating into one government army under Taban Dengai.
You mean one part will come to the side of the government, the other side will continue the rebellion in South Sudan. And that will alter the peace that we are looking for.
Edmond Yakani, Director for Community Empowerment for Progress Organization, or SEPO, agrees with the Okuk. Yakani says adhering to an inclusive process as defined in the peace agreement for integrating SPLM-IO forces is the best way to end ongoing insecurities across the country.
We wish that the integration should be a complete 100% IO integration without being named or factions under name.
President Kiir last week announced to lawmakers in the capital, Juba, that he has set 2017 deadline for integration of the SPLM-IO forces into the National Army. Recent divisions within the SPLM-IO ranks have divided the party into splinter groups, those loyal to Riek Machar and those loyal to Taban Dengai. Okuk says the SPLM-IO movement must first become unified before proceeding with the integration process.
You can't deny any of them saying. Nobody can say Taban has no forces to integrate. He has forces, but he will not have all of the IO to integrate. Some of the forces will still remain on the side of Victoria.
Under the security arrangements, the peace agreement signed last August calls for the integration of the SPLM-IO forces into the National Army. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Nairobi.
Sudan is defending a decision to accept a visit from South Sudan's new first vice president, Taban Dengai, who arrived in Khartoum yesterday for a two-day visit. The SPLM in opposition representative to Ethiopia and the African Union, Goy Joel Yul, says Taban Dengai's appointment is illegal. Sudan Information Minister Ahmed Bilal tells James Batty that Khartoum recognizes Taban Deng as government leader.
You could know, Taban was in Kenya some few days ago, and this is the second leg of his tour in the region, trying to legitimize his being the first vice president. As SPLM-IO, we think that he's also trying to lobby for the regional force that's supposed to go to Juba. He's trying to negotiate terms, you know, trying to find out from Khartoum and Nairobi and other neighboring countries whether they could negotiate some terms with the force.
What do you think the fact that he's gone to Khartoum and the Minister of Information there has described Taban as a good friend, do you believe that the government in South Sudan, the Salva Kiir government, is making headway so that the IGAD region can forget about your leader, Dr. Riek Machar?
Salva Kiir cannot make that by himself, you know, and when Taban was discovered a few days ago, they thought Taban could have a leverage. You know, Taban was a governor on a border state of unity after our independence, and they thought with Taban links to Khartoum, Taban can better their relations with Khartoum. But the issue of forgetting about the first vice president, I think it's a far-fetched idea, because if we need peace in South Sudan, we need to go by the peace agreement. We should follow what was written in the letter in the spirit of the peace agreement, so that the holistic peace comes back to the people, not a partial one that will be what the government of Salva Kiir wants.
Are you willing to tell us now, where is Dr. Riek Machar, your leader? Where is he? Because nobody has been able to confirm, at least from your side, to confirm, according to what we know, that he is in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Yeah, we have confirmed a few days ago that he was picked up within the Democratic Republic of Congo by UN and then the Democratic Republic of Congo government. And from there, we lost touch. But we know that he's still doing fine.
Taban Dengai has told the Khartoum government that he is willing to step down if and when Dr. Machar comes back to Juba. Do you have hope that Dr. Machar can go back to Juba?
We do. We do still have hope that he can go back to Juba, but we do not believe in sincerity of what Taban Dengai is telling us. And because through what happened and through what they went through and changes that happened, you know, we do not believe that they are willing to step down when Dr. Machar comes to Juba. They will create a lot of hurdles and problems so that that thing doesn't happen.
That's Joel Yul, SPLM-IO representative to Ethiopia and the African Union. He was speaking to VOA's James Batty earlier today. Church leaders in Yei River State are asking aid agencies and individuals to provide emergency humanitarian assistance to thousands of people displaced from their homes after recent fighting in the state. The church leaders say many farmers abandoned their farms during the fighting, and it's difficult to import food from neighboring countries because all roads leading to Yei are impassable due to insecurity. Tito Justin has the story for VOA from Juba.
Bishop Luate Adeba of the Episcopal Church of Sudan and South Sudan says more than 10,000 people have fled their homes and are sheltering in various church and school compounds due to the recent violence in Yei River State. He says thousands of other residents fled across the border to neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo and Uganda during the violence between government forces and armed militia groups. He says the number is likely to rise because people continue to flee every day. Bishop Luate is appealing to aid agencies and individuals to help rescue the displaced who he says normally rely on their own food and have never asked for humanitarian assistance since South Sudan declared its independence in 2011.
This is a genuine appeal that came out from a very careful assessment of the situation here in Yei, because the church had never actually asked for relief in the history of Yei. But this is the first time, and we would like to emphasize that let our appeal be taken seriously, because now the situation is serious. The situation is dire. People are soon beginning to die from starvation.
Church leaders from various denominations, including the Catholic Church, Episcopal Church of South Sudan and Sudan, and the Evangelical Presbyterian Church of South Sudan, have formed what they call the Yei Ecumenical Emergency Relief Committee to mobilize humanitarian assistance for those affected by violence in the state. Bishop Erkalano Ladutombe of the Catholic Diocese of Yei heads the committee. He says life has become nearly unbearable for residents like him because traders are unable to import food from neighboring Uganda and the Democratic Republic of Congo due to insecurity on the roads.
Many of those displaced have lost their homes, and their houses having been burned, food and household items looted. Those poor have left behind their resources of livelihood and income. Crops that were due to be harvested in August and September are unable to be harvested due to insecurity.
Bishop Lodu says church leaders will continue to monitor the situation very closely. Mohamed Tahiri is the UN Refugee Agency Associate Officer in Yei. He says his agency is willing to provide relief aid to the displaced, but they are unable to access remote village due to insecurity on the roads. Tahiri says just 2 weeks ago, a non-gunman looted a UNHCR truck carrying 15 metric tons of food to refugees in Yei County's Lasso Payam.
For us, the most important thing is security of roads. And if we have security of roads and the items are not hampered to be moved from one side to another, to commercial ones, that itself will change a lot. It will change the situation of people.
Bishop Tombe says He expects humanitarian conditions to worsen because farmers missed the second planting season, which will lead to severe food shortage next year.
It is clear that the people have been seriously affected physically, economically, psychologically, and spiritually. Many express disappointment that the peace agreement is collapsing, that leaders have brought this disaster upon the country, and that the risk of renewed outbreaks of fighting could mean an even more uncertain future.
The Juba Yei Road has been closed due to attacks by armed groups that local officials say have ties to former First Vice President Riek Machar. Bishop Lodu says all roads linking the state capital to the area's four counties are impassable because of the violence. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has called for redeploying a protection force to help stabilize South Sudan while in Nairobi today. Kerry also warned that U.S. aid to South Sudan could be cut off unless leaders there take steps to stabilize the conflict-ridden country, as was at the top of the agenda today as Kerry met with Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta and foreign ministers from Kenya, Uganda, Sudan, Somalia, and South Sudan at the start of his three-nation tour. The Secretary of State announced the U.S. would be giving $138 million in new aid to South Sudan, which he said would be used for food, water, and medicine for those in need. He also issued a warning to that country's leadership, saying, "We made it crystal clear that this is not forever. We're not just going to fill in a void. We're not just going to provide help incessantly if they are not willing to accept responsibility and do the things necessary to deliver to their people." Kerry also said the U.S. has fully support sending the 4,000-troop regional protection force into South Sudan that was recently authorized by the UN Security Council. A prominent SPLM-IO official says his party does not accept the government's preconditions for the return to Juba of former First Vice President Riek Machar. South Sudan's Information Minister Michael McQuay says the cabinet decided Machar must stop practicing politics first before he returns to the South Sudanese capital. And finally, the government of Sudan is defending the visit to Khartoum of South Sudan Vice President Taban Deng. Deng arrived yesterday in Khartoum for a two-day visit with top Khartoum officials. Goy Jewel Yole, the SPLM in opposition representative to Ethiopia and the African Union, said his appointment as first vice president is illegal and that the visit to Sudan is aimed at making him look legitimate. President Salva Kiir sacked former first vice president Machar in Juba after clashes broke out between SPLM-IO and government forces. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Let Me Go by Talis. We've been listening to Talis with the song Let Me Go. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could be here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.